Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Talk New York sports here. The Fan.
Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on The Fan on this now Tuesday afternoon. And we can go over a couple of different things, BT, because we've been all over the place here so far through the first 2 hours. But we did start with the Giants. And I know it turned into still more of the, trickle down from Sunday's loss. I am trying to move forward and focus on the positives here. It will continue to be an evaluation of Brian Daboll, and there's no way you could justify losing a game like that. But they did have the lead in impressive fashion against a team that I think is the best defense in the NFL and one of the best teams in the NFL, in the Denver Broncos, for three quarters. And to me, it was more encouraging. Obviously, the loss hurts and potentially torpedoes the season if they don't beat the Eagles this Sunday. But there are more encouraging things to take from the first three quarters to me than the collapse in the fourth quarter.
I agree with that. I mean, listen, there was a point where I was thanking the NFL scheduling gods for putting the Jets and the Giants on at the same time, so I only had to watch one of them. I mean, honestly, now I'm at the point like, all right, come on, Jets, finish this up so I can watch some real football. Now, what does that mean in terms of Brian Daboll's long-term future? I don't know. What does it mean in terms of a potential playoff run if they can, beat Philly again and sweep the series and maybe take out the Niners, and it's a tough schedule? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But what I do know is I want to sit down and watch Giants football, which is a pretty good starting point.
Yeah, but they should. See, to me, like, that was, we know that that's the case since Jackson Dart has taken over, and then they've had some success, obviously, since that. To me, they could still win the season. It shouldn't just be about next year. Let's play this year now, where you still have a relevant season. Even though they're 2-5 and it seems mathematically challenging, it is. If they beat the Eagles and they split these two difficult games in Denver, in Philadelphia, I think it is season back on here. And then you got to take care of business. Obviously, against the Niners, not going to be easy. The Bears, whatever. But every game on the board is a winnable game now with Jackson Dart under center. The question is, can the coaches actually figure out a way to win these games instead of coming so close and losing them? That no longer is accepted. This is not an evaluation mode anymore, because you could take advantage of a rookie's success right now. And I give him a chance. Now, I don't think it's likely at this point. You know the Eagles starting to right the ship a little bit the way that they looked against Minnesota. You know they're going to be upset. It's hard to sweep, a season series against a division rival, not to mention the Super Bowl, reigning Super Bowl champs. But I think it's possible. And as long as the Giants do take care of business, then it can be season back on. And if they lose, then okay, any talk of the playoffs, like that stuff, is way out the window. This year definitively is over. And then to me, it becomes about the evaluation of Brian Daboll and definitively deciding one way or another, is he the guy to take this team to the next level, which we expect they should be ready to go to as soon as next season?
Well, yes, and you have a draft and you add some pieces, and yeah, they should be ready to go further next year for sure. I mean, listen, guys, I think it's been pretty apparent the last couple of days, and even before, the game this past weekend, where I've been leaning into the Giants. I think a lot of us have, unless you're just hating, which we're certainly not here to do. There's been an awakening here for the New York Football Giants, which is awesome. But I look at this, and I've got to stomp out the emotion that is beginning to override the logic because logically, as I look at this road here, there's only one game that they're probably going to be favored to win, and that's the Raiders game. I see a lot of losses. I see hopefully a lot of closely contested good battles, four-quarter games. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I know you don't really think so either. What you're really saying is if they win this week, that it's just on.
Yeah.
At least the conversation.
I'm saying that going into these two games, I said they at least had to split to have a shot. So I can't bury them. As horrific as a loss that was, I'm keeping that shot alive until I see what happens this week.
Now, I'm looking saying. At it. I got you. And I'm looking at this here. And Rami's going to pop in with some numbers in a sec here. I don't know, but we'll get the answer in a moment as I look at the Giants schedule. Like where it stacks up against the rest of the NFL. Again, I would have to think this, I know it was very hard coming in, but I would think in terms of strength of schedule, it's got to be incredibly high now, if not the hardest. What do you got there, Rami?
So for the remainder of the season, this is according to Tankathon, who does this. So they have the Giants as the toughest strength of schedule.
I mean, there you go.
No surprise.
The toughest.
But, no surprise, but I mean.
Man, I wish they had a couple of hangers in there.
Yeah, well,
you know,
exactly.
A couple layups.
Well, they did,
and they lost them. That's the problem.
Well,
they had the Saints.
Yeah, and that's going to happen with the rookie quarterback, his second start. Like, they should have won that game, but obviously the turnover, you can't say you should have won with five turnovers, but they could have won that game had they played cleaner football. That's going to happen with the rookie, even with the mistake the other day with Jackson Dart throwing an interception. Multiple things happened for them to cough up that lead. All I'm saying is that I look at their schedule now and say, well, yeah, obviously it's tough in Philadelphia, home against the Niners, at Chicago, home against the Packers. They can win those games. They just beat the Chargers at home. They beat the Eagles at home. They should have easily beaten the Broncos on the road. That, to me, means that they should be in play. And also, you look at the final four games, home against Washington, home against the Vikings, at the Raiders, home against the Cowboys. Those, to me, are four. Now, maybe they go 3-1. Who knows? Maybe they're on the table. But those are very winnable games to me. I think they could be favored in two of those games. Who knows what's going to happen with the Commanders here. Vikings, same thing. Cowboys, even though they beat the Commanders, I'm not still trusting the Cowboys. At New England, at Detroit, tough. Sure, tough games here. Giants are in play, though. And if they lose to the Eagles, then that to me, if you lose to the Eagles 2-6, definitively you are now. You can't be talked about as a team that could potentially salvage this season this year, and then it's back to being solely on, is Dable the right guy?
Yeah, and it's going to morph into that at some point. It already has with some of these calls, which we'll get back to in a moment. You know, the Chargers win, not to take it away, because in real time it was awesome. Doesn't seem quite as impressive. I don't know what's wrong with them, but something's off. I don't like Denver nearly as much as you do. We'll see how that plays out. If I'm looking at this the rest of the way, I'm kind of feeling, you know, six wins, but the larger point is, you know, before the Chargers win, we really couldn't make a case at all for them to win any game. Now it's very easy to make a case where they should be in every game, and it's after what we've been through, it's a good step forward. I'll take it.
BT and Sal on the Fan. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. We also talked about the Knicks a little bit and the questioning from a former player, Matt Barnes, on a podcast. Question Mike Brown saying he doesn't believe he's going to be the right guy to lead the Knicks. He's too nice of a guy, a little bit of a pushover. We'll find out. Debut tomorrow night. Much more on the Knicks tomorrow as well, but we mentioned that earlier. In case you missed anything, check it out on the free Odyssey app. Anthony is calling from New Paltz. What's up, Ant?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, it's kind of a three-part question here for the Giants, kind of. Or at what point do the Giants maybe consider elevating Brandon Brown to GM and letting Joe Shane go with all of our roster mismanagement? Not to mention, I think all three of us would have picked Malik Nabers and Abdul Carter in the first round, the last two drafts. And then the other part is, do you think Shane Bowen is a reflection of Brian Daboll? Because it feels like we aren't really getting the best coaches on our staff right now. Mm.
Think about this. Common sense. Anytime you've got a coach who, whether it's right or wrong, accurate or inaccurate, on borrowed time, I mean, unless you're a first-year coordinator who's getting a shot or a position coach who's getting an elevation to coordinator, why would you take the job if you think you might get fired? Because then you're next.
Yeah, no, that's true. I totally agree. And then the last part is, like you were saying, Jackson Dart's running. They're implementing his Ole Miss offense. Obviously, I love him. I think he's the right fit for us. He's got the moxie. He's a playmaker. But I'm just a little concerned with that because Daboll's supposed to be this offensive genius.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of babied Daniel Jones that one year when we went 9-7. And then we looked at what happened the following year. Like, so I'm just a little concerned that if we keep, like, not babying Dart, but like running that system, is that going to hinder his development a little bit? I mean, I don't think he's Daniel Jones mentally.
It's working. What more do you need to see? Like, if the system's working, I understand maybe some concerns, and we'll see. I mean, certainly not through the first four games, Ant, and thank you for the call. We'll see if we get to a point where you say, you know what? They need to unleash another level or do something different because they've only taken this so far. Right now, it's in the infancy stages, but it is working. It's working well. Offense has not been the issue here. Turning the ball over, whatever. That's going to happen with the rookies. But it's not like, oh, man, they can't score. Dart looks overwhelmed or he's not making the right throws or reads. No, this offense has been working and there's been a little bit of everything. Oh, and by the way, they don't even have a receiver. They went up their best receiver in Malik Nabers.
Yeah, and by the way, to me, it shows... And I don't really throw a ton of compliments around Dable's way, but here's one of them. It shows a lack of ego, and I also think it shows some adaptability there, which is something I talk a lot about with coaches, where if you're going to try to make your young quarterback more comfortable and these concepts... Now, I don't know. They said it on the broadcast. I don't pretend to know to what degree, like how many pages in the Giants playbook actually has Ole Miss stuff. I don't know. Maybe we'll get more and more information as we get, you know, more and more reps from Jackson Dart. But I think if you had too big of an ego or you're like, oh, my, you know, I'm better, I'm more innovative, forget about college, screw that, then you would probably be much less willing to incorporate this. So I think it actually shows a sign of Dable that's kind of impressive because it is working. Now, he also came with the reputation as an offensive innovator. I prefer him to come up with some stuff that was working for the quarterback rather than going to Ole Miss.
Yeah, maybe he will eventually.
True, working him in now.
I mean, he is a rookie, and they're having success. Like, we questioned as recently as this year. Dable's supposed to be an offensive guy. They couldn't score any points.
Yeah.
Not until week two did they finally start scoring some points.
Well, not only that, but think about how Daniel Jones, even though they won the road playoff game, he threw 15 touchdown passes. Yeah. I mean, that was 1960 stuff.
Well,
basically, let Daniel Jones run wild and Saquon, and that was it.
It's not just 1 year. It was 3 years, and then week two, they had the explosion with Russell Wilson. Week three, same thing, back to not being able to move the football again. So now at least we've seen that the Giants can score points here. They've scored, well, New Orleans, they turned it over five times, but at least moved the football a ton. But they scored 21 points against the Chargers, 34 against the Eagles, and 32 in the loss against the Broncos.
That's true.
They've been scoring a bunch of points here. Let's see here. Mitch is calling from Queens. What's up, Mitch?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Oh, as always, enjoy the show. To me, the biggest question is this. Did the Giants have a good three quarters, or did Denver have a bad three quarters? And also with Philadelphia, did the Giants play a great game, or did Philly have a horrible game?
Well, but Mitch, hold on, Mitch.
I think the jury is still out.
It is. That's why we're talking about this.
Right.
I think the jury's definitely still out. It's a fair point, but... You know, I would say that it's a little, I don't want to be nuts here, a little unfair. Like, when the Giants play well, you're kind of leaning toward the other team just not playing a good game. Now, it's too small of a sample size for me to make a real definitive opinion on that, but I'm siding toward the Giants just playing some better football.
Well, we're all hoping that. You know, I was watching the game, and just like everybody else, as things got closer to the end, we were all, you know, biting our nails. But I think it also goes to the big overall problem that we've had with the Giants is that we're thinking that the quarterback is the solution, right? And Wilson would have did probably the same job, right? And I think that I don't have a problem with them winning one game, losing a game, losing two games, winning two games. That's what happens when you have a new quarterback with a new team and you're playing together. I have no problem with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's balanced. It's like, you know, they're finding their way. It's okay. There's no reason to panic. He's a great player. I'm not really convinced about the coaching staff.
That's part of the issue, Mitch. And thank you for the call. That's the issue. I don't think anybody's panicking. I think people are pissed off, and rightfully so, because they lost a game that they had no business losing. That can't happen. And it's the second time that they've lost a game like that. Think about it. The Giants couldn't score touchdowns for years. Now they score a touchdown with under a minute to go. Twice they've done that. On the road, mind you, two times. And they've lost both those games. You score a touchdown late with under a minute to go, whatever the exact time is. With Denver, it was, what, 37 seconds, something like that.
Yeah.
I forget what it was in Dallas. But you score a touchdown late, which should be the nail in the coffin and win. They've done that twice on the road and yet still lost both those games.
That's why I'm getting on some of the Giant defenders here. Now, if they're not being deployed properly by Bowen, that's an even bigger problem. with Bowen. But Dexter Lawrence, been pretty quiet. You know, Abdul Carter, I like him, and I thought he was going to be wrecking games from day one. Hasn't. I think Kayvon Thibodeau's been pretty good. I think Burns has been great. I think Flott's shown some progress. He's a legitimate NFL cornerback, in my opinion, now. But, see, I want to go back to something here, because the last caller brings up something interesting. Like, all right, did Philly not play a good game? Did Denver? I don't know the answer. We'll find out eventually as this goes
forward.
Maybe
it's a little bit of both, but whatever.
Could be. But as we were trying to diagnose the Giants-Broncos game going into the game, one thing that I said was, advantage Giants in this regard. Giants played on Thursday, a little mini bye. Obviously, they got a few extra days to rest up and chill and regenerate. Denver's out in London. It's not like going from Jacksonville or New York up to London. You know, suddenly you're going from Colorado across the country to London. That's 9 hours. They elected not to take their bye. So was Denver a little sleepy to start the game? Maybe. And if that's the case, the Giants pounced on them earlier, which they did, 13 and eventually 19 zip. And maybe it took a little while for the Broncos to get their footing before they woke up and they're like, whoa, let's go. And then they scored 33 on them in the fourth. I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit of everything, but the good thing is there's still enough season. We're going to get the answer. I don't think that the season's going to end and we're going to be like, is Dable the right guy? Is Jackson Dart legitimate? I think the answer to the first question will probably be no, and I'm very confident the answer to the second question will be yes.
I think the Giants took advantage of a Eagles team who was still finding itself a couple weeks ago, but they dominated that game. I don't care what the final score says. Watching the game, I never felt like Philadelphia was going to win. Think about what we're talking about here. A team that the Giants couldn't sniff for years, it felt in that game that the Giants were never going to lose that game. So those are huge strides, even if it is a less than Philadelphia team, which no one's going to argue it is, or it has been so far, maybe outside of this past week in Minnesota, it has been to start the season a less than team in accordance with the one that won the Super Bowl last year and dominated the NFL basically from start to finish. Still, I'm not taking away from the Giants. First three quarters against the Broncos, I think the Giants deserve credit for that. Denver's good, and it was more Benito getting chewed up by Andrew Thomas, the Giants being able to run the football on that Denver defense, make enough plays, and what was a tight game, 13-0 at the half, whatever it may be. I think the Giants played just a better football game than the first three quarters, and what happened in the fourth quarter to me is the Giants' poor coaching, whether it's tight coaching, poor plays, and then the Broncos either making adjustments or turning it on and figuring it away, a total combination of things. Like, it took a lot to blow that lead.
Mm-hmm.
Turnover, poor play calling, lack of aggression on offense as well.
Also took defense, a lot to get the lead. Which is part of the conversation.
Well, right. That's why I think that And Denver, by the way, is good. It was a matter of time before they were going to score some points. So you went up against a good head coach in their home with a team that's talented on both sides of the football. It was going to be close there. The comeback was going to eventually happen. It should have never gotten to the point that it did, which is why you knocked the Giants for that. But I don't think this is just, oh, Denver stinks, and that's why the Giants were able to, you know, compete in that game. No, to me, no. I think you take it away from the Giants here. And it could be wrong, but I firmly believe that with Jackson Dart, anything is possible with this team.
I think I'm with you on that ultimate point, which is the good point, because that's why Giant fans should be excited about the big picture. But to me, like, if the Giants went into Denver, 5-5 similar situations, do I think they're jumping out to a massive lead and shutting Denver out in any of those other games? Probably not. Do I think that they get smoked in one of those games? Probably, because it's a 3,000-mile trip and the altitude, and Denver's got a good defense and a Hall of Fame coach. So, yeah, I think there's probably a decent chance to get lit up once or twice, but it doesn't matter. You know, you go in, you play the game. When you play it, you do how you do. And, this, again, sounds like a loser mentality, but you got to start with baby steps here. And the Giants, for 75% of that game, a little more, because the comeback really came, about 80% of that game, the Giants looked like it was a real continuation of the prior game, which is good.
BT and Sal on the Fan, more your calls when we come back. Brian Baldinger will give us some insight when he joins us at 1240, 888-808-1019.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's Boomer
and Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Get back to the phones here. We got Brian Baldinger coming up at 12:40. So let's get you guys in here. We talked about the Knicks. We've talked about the Giants. We've also talked about Evan Roberts playing baseball. And Chris is in Lindenhurst, who maybe has some insight into that. What's up, Chris?
How you guys doing?
Good.
I'm the guy that ran Twitter Baseball with Evan for, it was 13 years.
Wow.
That the league ran. And before I tell you what his career numbers were, so you can, give them to David Stearns to see if he wants to sign him or not. The thing that Evan really deserves kudos for, and I love him to death, is that he gave all of the players, we had more than 1,000 players come through the league over the years and play. And for me, he gave me the fountain of youth to be able to get back on the field and play the game that I loved as a kid that I, you both know as you get older, you just can't play at the same level anymore. But just to be able to do that, and it's something I could never repay him for.
That's awesome.
Well, of course, as you got older, you still played at a better level than Evan played even in the prime of his life.
Well, let me give you the numbers, because I know you're chomping at the bit to know what they are.
You texted me these, right? So this is the same guy?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. We got the numbers. Go ahead.
So I have his batting line and his career pitching line. Now, batting line, he played in 100 games, 257 at-bats. Career batting average of 163.
Oh, come on, Ev.
All right, now
dude,
wait a minute.
That's bad.
163.
That's even worse than I thought.
Oh. Wait a second, though. Now, he's a career leader in walks.
Oh, geez.
So he walked 93 times in 257 at-bats. So his on-base percentage career was .398.
That's good for $30 million a year now in the show.
Who's taking walks in Twitter baseball?
I know.
I'm going to swing.
Look, there is a video I have on my YouTube channel of he hit the game-winning championship double back in, I think it was 2022. A two-run double that everybody can go watch. And he had posted it on the FAN, I think, had posted it years ago. So his career OPS is .585. No homers, 29 RBIs, 102 strikeouts, and 257 at-bats.
Okay. So he's basically Jose's Siri without the speed.
Do you want the pitching line?
Yeah, of course. He's a lefty.
Okay.
It's got to be better,
now,
right?
Not really, but you might as well. Go ahead. Yeah.
Now, he was the 2013 Cy Young Award winner in Twitter baseball. But I don't have that line from Nigel Civic career numbers in front of me because I'm at work and I have this stuff with me. So career-wise, he pitched 155 and two-thirds innings, gave up 225 hits, 210 runs.
Nice.
151 earned. You'll love these numbers. He walked. He struck out 146.
Who kept all these stats?
I think this guy did.
I did.
What's Chris, wrong with you?
You married? Do you have a girlfriend? Do you have a hobby?
I'm married. I have two kids.
Yeah, this was his escape. I mean, he wants to get the hell out of there and dive into the numbers of Twitter baseball.
It's something I loved ever since I was a kid. You guys probably don't remember. I had called you guys months back and asked you guys who was your favorite scrub in the history of the games. And I think BT came up with Mike Pagliarulo.
Yeah, it did.
Wasn't considered a scrub.
Yeah.
That was me.
I don't remember.
You couldn't come up with one, I don't think, off the top of your head. But anyway,
all the guys I liked weren't scrubs, like Ray Ordonez. He was not a scrub.
155 in two-thirds innings. How many whiffs?
146.
Okay. What's the ERA and the whip before we get moving here? ERA.
The ERA is 8.73.
Oh, God. What's the whip?
2.44.
Oh, goodness.
Well, thank you, Chris, for the insight there. Look, I don't like the stats from major league players, let alone from Twitter baseball with Evan Roberts.
Those are pretty heavy. 8.73. God bless him, man. He goes out there, he has fun, he keeps it loose.
The fact that he would be hitting 163 in Twitter baseball
Yeah.
Like, that's bad. You should be hitting at least 300.
Well, to be fair, yes. I mean, 163 is a little low. Was he bad himself second?
Kind of baseball. Twitter baseball?
No, it's like, horrendous.
Come on.
Hold on, though. You don't know if there were guys who played D2 or D3 and just came down. Oh, I want to hang out with Evan Roberts from the Fan and some guys. I'm just saying, guy comes down on a Sunday, he's throwing 83. Evan's not touching 73 on all probability if you got to change up.
Maybe once. 100 games? 63.
100 games. That's a lot of ball.
Honestly, he sent us a video of him taking hacks at Citi Field. We're talking about this because Hoff took off today to go take batting practice at Citi Field. I guess they invited season ticket or whatever it may be. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
But Evan couldn't do it because his back hurt, so we let Hoff do it. So Hoff is missing work because of it. Evan sent us the video of him doing it last year.
Yeah, not bad.
And he looked pretty good.
Not bad. Not bad. I mean, not bad. Like a level. You know, obviously not like explosive, but really like mechanically fairly sound. Keeps the barrel in the zone there. It's not terrible.
He looked good relative to how he normally looks is the way that I would put
it. Well, Rami played with him.
I played a couple of times in that Twitter baseball.
What was the level of
comp? How old were you when this Twitter baseball was going on?
How did you do?
Because a few years ago, it was still going on.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
So you were in your 20s.
I was early 20s when I played.
Did you dominate? Did you do anything?
Yeah, I was good. I was one of the best guys there.
Oh, here we go.
I only played twice there.
We got to get Chris to get Rami's numbers up in your two games.
Oh, God. Yeah. I know one of my games was terrible, and one of them I was the best one there.
Okay. So basically, we don't care about you as much as like the comp was bad for Evan.
My point is that it's not like you had a great... There was no competition D3 guys who were...
Guys beach balling it up there.
If they were D2 guys, it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, I remember Hector in Washington Heights used to go like these...
Did he really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He loves it.
I get it. I mean, come on. I don't know. But listen, let me put myself in the shoes of a 20-something-year-old, and like we were when we were listening to the station back in the day. I don't know if Beningo or one of those guys had a baseball league. And I can go hang out with Joe and play baseball?
Yeah, 100%.
Why wouldn't you go?
100%.
I would definitely go.
Yeah, definitely. Larry's calling from Medford. What's up, Larry?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How are you, Larry?
Hey, Larry.
All right, so I want to talk about, first of all, I'm a Cowboy fan, so I never expect to win with Jerry in charge. I expect good regular seasons, but no playoff wins. So, but you guys were talking about the strength of schedule before with the Giants and stuff.
Yep.
I think the Cowboys this year are the first team ever to play 6 straight games against teams that won at least 10 games a year before. So that's a tough schedule.
Okay. Yep.
You guys were saying how tough the Giants' schedule was. No one's ever done what Dallas is doing this year.
No, nobody cares about the Cowboys here, Larry.
They played Carolina two weeks ago and they lost.
It's New York.
It's Carolina.
We're not worried about what's going on with the Cowboys. I mean, there's Dallas for that. Now, I don't understand that we have a lot of Cowboys fans in the area, but as far as us doing a talk show, we're talking about the Giants. So it's not like, oh, nobody ever brings up the Cowboys. Yeah, that's because they're not relevant until they're playing one of our teams.
And it's not even accurate. I mean, what he's saying here, they played the Giants in week two, who were awful, at least going into that game. They played Carolina 2 weeks ago and, you know, they're not good. And they played the Commanders. Jaden Daniels with a jacked up hamstring. What are we talking about here? They played the Jets.
Yeah, you beat the Jets, you lost to the Panthers, and you beat a banged up Commanders team.
That was a factually inaccurate call.
And they have the 17th strength of schedule the rest of the way.
Yeah.
The
lost Cowboys. To the Bears, who I don't think are very good. I know they're playing better. I think Caleb Williams stinks myself.
I'm not a huge fan.
But anyway, and then they beat the Giants in a game that they should have lost. Like, I don't understand where you're pounding your chest on. I'll tell you this. I didn't pick the Broncos in the knockout pool last week. Jackson Dart scared me. I'm taking them this week. They're going to beat the Cowboys to a pulp. This is going to be great defense versus an offense that Dak Prescott has played like an MVP this year. I don't think Cowboys have any chance in winning this football game this Sunday.
Have you taken the Dolphins yet? Pardon me. Have you gone with the Falcons yet? Okay, they're playing the Dom. Look at other games. Would you...
For the knockout pool?
Yeah, would you entertain taking the Bengals over the Jets in Cincy?
Possibly.
Okay. How about the Pats at home against the Browns?
No.
Probably not enough faith yet fully to say, I'm going to roll with the Pats.
I know Cleveland stinks.
I hear you.
Cleveland's defense scares me a little bit. And I just don't trust the Pats yet.
What about the Niners over the Texans? It's on the road, but the Texans are a mess.
No, I would go home game, non-divisions, my first thing.
Fair enough.
And then I also try to avoid the first layup.
Okay. All right, because then you don't have a ton of options. Because I was thinking maybe the Bucs to bounce back against the Saints, but that's a divisional matchup.
Sometimes so you have to go away from it. I didn't want to do the Chiefs last week for two reasons, because division rival, Chiefs and Raiders, and because it was the obvious pick. But I didn't love any of the other games the way that I did. Like, I was just like, forget it. I'm not going to force the issue with Denver. And it's a good thing I didn't. Even though they won, still, like, the stress of that, it shows you it was not the right pick to go against the Giants in that spot. And the Chiefs was a layup against the Raiders.
Dude, what is going on with the Raiders? I mean, they're not even competitive at this point. Well, they were
banged up. No Brock Bowers, no Jacoby Myers. I think they're going to be returning this week. But, yeah, they've been bad. Ashton Gentry is not running the football. I mean, he's been bad so far.
He's had three straight games where he's been.
Yeah. So, you know. I mean, Geno Smith stinks. He's been turning the ball over a ton.
I mean, 40-6 loss at the Colts, 31-0 at KC. They beat Tennessee, who stinks.
One thing I do want to ask Baldy, BT, because we'll stick with the Giants, obviously, and ask him about that game and all that's going on there. But I do want to ask him about the Colts and how legit he thinks the Colts are. We'll do that when we come back. Brian Baldinger, then we'll get back to your calls starting after Baldy at 1 o'clock. This Odyssey Sports Minute is brought to you by the New Jersey Division of Highway Traffic Safety. Look out for pedestrians. Safety is a shared responsibility.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Boomer
and Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
We're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast, Insider Calls, brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Baldy, I still can't believe what happened in the fourth quarter. Maybe you could explain it to us after watching the film. Why do you think that one got away from the Giants in Denver?
It just can't put, you know, one thing, four straight touchdowns like that. They got hot. Everybody's talked about, the decision to throw it on third down and five, at your own 30-yard line, when Denver's already clearly showing you that they're going to burn all their timeouts, that the clock is the enemy. They need as much time as possible. It's a two-score game. It's 26-16. And, of course, Jackson makes the one bad throw that he makes all day. He's trying to step over all kinds of bodies in there, Scatterboo's on the ground, Singleton's on the ground. He's trying to step over it to get it to Theo. And, Sternad jumps out, and takes it away from him. I'm not sure if you saw him or not. It might have just been a bad throw because of all the traffic that he was trying to navigate. But, that play, really hurt him because they got him a short field. They got the instant score. The quarterback got really hot. And, we've never seen anything like it. But it's a compilation of a lot of bad things happening all at once.
Well, Baldy, I know we have you on here to run through the tape, and there's a lot of things we want to throw by you, but I just need an opinion on this here. So, obviously, five change, you laid it out, run, timeout, pass for whatever reason, dumb move there, and you knew that if they ran, it would have been a third timeout. Okay, so they messed that up. Concepts and offense, forget about that. When you're in your fourth year as a head coach, how do you not know that? How do you mess that up if you're Dable?
I was watching the game. I was in the airport. I was in Minnesota, did the Eagles game. We're watching the game without the sound, but we're just watching it as a group. And I bet you were doing the same thing, and I bet every Giant fan was doing. Like, you're doing this thing in your own head. We're all sort of, playing Madden all along. Like, I think everybody's looking at it like, just run it. Just run it. If you gain a yard, so what? Punt it. You've got 4.5 minutes. They're going to take the timeout. Make them go a long field. I don't know how you don't know it. I don't know. I mean, I heard, you know, I heard Coach talk about, yeah, well, a couple weeks ago we had a situation. He made a great throw. Well, I mean, that's Surtain covering Theo Johnson. That's a defense that leads the league in sacks. You know, they just had 9 against the Jets. They had a bunch against the Giants. Like, you got sharks out there, man. You know, I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm not sure. You can't really justify that one away. I mean, if I'm the coach, honestly, I'm just taking it like it's on me. Like, I made that mistake. It's not on my quarterback. Like, I can't put him in that position. Like, I just think at least you have to own up to that. But I the play call itself, like, is just a mystery.
My issue, Baldy, and I admit, like, I would have been more aggressive there. Once Peyton started to call timeouts 5 minutes ago, I'm not trying to play run the clock out here. You can't do that on multiple drives. And they did the predictable run, and then pass. I know people take issue with whatever. My bigger issue is, how the hell do you have 3 down linemen and dropping 8 when you just got burned in week 2 with the Cowboys kicking a field goal? I'd be curious to get your take on that. I had a major issue with the defense backing off there after the touchdown gave them the lead late.
So did Brian Burns. Yeah, well. You know, I mean, with the player, I mean, he wasn't shy about it. And I don't blame him. I was ticked because, you know, just because you drop 8 doesn't ensure anything. Like, you know, you got Banks out there. He's just like a statue out there. They're making an in cut right there. He's not following the receiver. Like, it's just sort of unnatural how to actually play 8 guys, because you rarely do it. So you do it as an insurance thing, I think so. But honestly, I don't know. Like, you've got these pass rushers. You're paying all these guys this money. You're making all these draft picks. Like, let them go to work. You know, let them go to work. You got a brand-new left guard in there. You know, he hadn't played left guard. He's been a tackle, Palcheski. Like, just make him block you up right there.
Mm-hmm. You know, Burns has been phenomenal. I think Kayvon Thibodeau's coming along real well. I like the season he's having. I want to see Abdul Carter start wrecking some games. I think eventually we will maybe use him a little differently. I don't love what I'm seeing from Lawrence, and you and I agreed upon that a couple of weeks back, maybe a little bit banged up, whatever. What is the film saying 1 through 7 here? There's been a lot of football so far now. What is it saying about Lawrence?
Well, I mean, he's not getting the type of push that we're used to seeing. He has played better. I'm not going to say that he's invisible out there. He has played better. I've seen him play more snaps than he's playing. I've seen him play more volume of snaps, and sometimes you're on the field more, you're going to get more opportunities. But we just haven't seen the splash plays from him. And I just thought, you know, put him up against Palcheski. He's first-time left guard in there. He's new. His third left guard they've had in 3 weeks in there. Like, let him go see what the kid's made of. And I didn't think that he made him feel his punch, as I like to say.
Well, Baldy, hold on. That's unacceptable. I mean, he's got a massive, and I know that you're right, but I needed to hear it from you because you know this stuff better than all of us. He's making a ton of money, and people walk around saying, oh, yeah, Dexter Lawrence, well, you know, top, second best defensive lineman in football. If people are going to throw that around so loosely and so definitively, you got to start playing better football, period.
Well, you know, the perspective I get is I get to see defensive tackles that are playing great, like Derrick Brown in Carolina, like guys that are really changing the game. You know, they're batting the balls down. They're pushing the pocket. They're throwing bodies around, like physically just throwing people right off the screen. Like, I just don't see the physical dominance that I think we saw for a couple years up until the injury last year that we saw from Dexter, where just physically he was better. I mean, Jason Kelce still talks about that's a nightmare going up against Dexter Lawrence, you know, at the end of his career and what that was like. And, you know, it might have taken, you know, maybe made him think about retirement. But regardless, like, I just don't see the physical dominance that I see from other Chris Jones, Derrick Brown, the guys that I think people want to put him in that category. He's just not playing at that level.
BT and Sal on the Fan. We're talking with Brian Baldinger. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. How about the Giants defense overall, Baldy? A lot of people questioning the defensive coordinator, Bowen, want him out. We talk about being vanilla or conservative, where they have players all over the field, but yet it still hasn't been as dominant or as explosive maybe as we would have liked to have seen. What are you seeing from the Giants defense? Is it a scheme thing? Is it a players thing? What's going on with their defense?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a tale of two cities. I mean, for 3 quarters, it's as good as it gets. I mean, that's a good offense with a lot of weapons, with a, you know, a champion play caller on the other side. And they couldn't, you know, it was all punts in the first half. It was all punts in the third quarter. You know, you know, it all changed in the fourth quarter. Bo Nix made, I counted, 13 exceptional plays. Like, they didn't affect the quarterback in the fourth quarter. And, you know, that's when the game's now, you're up 19-0. You think, like, maybe you're just kind of, okay, we got this one. You're kind of, like, relaxing a little bit. We see this in all sports. You know, you got this big lead, and you're just, you know, the offense is still scoring. Tyrone Tracy, you know, is blasting one up the middle for a touchdown. You're still moving. And maybe you just relax a little bit, but that was that fourth quarter. The quarterback did whatever he wanted to do. Now, they got lucky, too. You know, the ball gets tipped, you know, off of Flott's hands and into, Troy Franklin's hands for a touchdown. I mean, that's a great individual play right there by Flott, who's playing really good football.
He is.
You know, and it ends up being a touchdown. I mean, that's just kind of luck. But at the same time, you know, hit the scrambles, the rollout. They only roll them to the right. Like, I mean, at some point you just go, okay, let's pressure him from that side so he can't come to the right where he's more comfortable.
Yeah, by the way, the Giants got a little bit lucky too. They had a ricochet for a touchdown.
No doubt.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm kind of hearing two different things with regards to the presentation of the Giants offense. Now, the other day they were talking a little bit, didn't delve too deeply into it, but they did mention, hey, there's some concepts that were utilized at Ole Miss. Okay. And then I also see a lot on social media, people who do what you do, not as well as you, but who do what you do, talking about, it looks a little scattered. Giants offense looks like recess ball. So which one is it? Are they doing Ole Miss stuff, or are they just running around like they're in recess?
He might have had more talent at Ole Miss than he has now.
Oh.
Trey Harris, you go watch Trey Harris play. I mean, you might take him over anybody that's playing wide out. Now, like, he missed a couple go shots the other day. It's going to happen. The deep ball, he had two, like, where there's no safety over the top. And, you know, you drop that in the bucket to Jalen Hyatt or to Wandale. You know, maybe we're not even talking about this collapse. So he missed a couple shots, but that's kind of sometimes the last thing to come to a quarterback. But I watched him at Ole Miss. I don't think this is a college simple. I think they've got some concepts that are pretty good and, you know, pretty reliable. I mean, it looks like a real offense. And the kid, you know, makes a lot of really good loose plays, you know, where he really navigates the pocket exceptionally well.
Yeah.
And that's a difficult front with great pass rushers inside and outside. And I don't know exactly how he feels it, but he keeps his eyes down the field. I mean, you guys, you know, in New York, I mean, going back to Dave Brown and some of these quarterbacks you've had, I mean, these guys drop their eyes as soon as they feel pressure. This guy almost never does that. It's almost a rare skill. And the pocket awareness that he has is pretty elite. I remember talking to Brady about it last year, and he's like, you can't coach it. You either have it or you don't have it. And I think this kid's got great pocket awareness.
It's one of the reasons why I'd be more encouraged, even with the horrific loss. You can't lose a game like that. We understand it. A lot of things went wrong. But Baldy, I mean, you mentioned championship play caller, an offense with weapons all over the place, and I think the best defense in the NFL. And to have Jackson Dart go in there and perform the way that he did as a rookie and, what, his fourth start in the league, I think it's more encouraging what happened in those first three quarters than the way that the result went in the fourth quarter for the Giants.
I agree. I totally agree. I mean, the kid has something to him now. He just has a feel for the game. He can drive the ball. Like, he doesn't play with any fear whatsoever. And that, not just running and taking hits. He got blasted on a couple of shots the other day and gets right up. But I mean, I'm talking about no fear of just, all right, pulling the trigger and just throwing it. Like, cause the guys on the other side, just north of here, like, they have a lot of fear about making a throw. This guy has no fear about making a throw.
Oh man. All right. Quickly on Scataboo, who's got this cult hero identity already. You know, the easiest thing to do is to take a white running back and try to find a former white running back, Allstott, you know, the white rhino, Peyton Hillis.
Yeah.
But I think that's lazy. So is there a comp that you know early comp in terms of Scataboo to somebody else?
He's like a baby Earl Campbell.
What?
Like, if you want to go back in time.
Earl Campbell.
I'm just saying, I said a baby. I'm not talking about the Earl.
All right.
I'm just saying, like, that's how Earl came. I'll never forget. When I was in Dallas and Earl was in Houston, we played him every year in preseason. And I still remember him, like, literally like a rhino, like hitting Everson Walls and, like, literally flipping him off the field back when, you know, starters used to play in the preseason. But, I mean, you know, you can feel these hits. You can feel it. Like, you can feel it in the stands. You can feel it when you're sitting here in a little film room and watching him. You can feel his power. It's real. I saw it at Arizona State. Like, he was the only guy he had. He was the only player they had at Arizona State. And they took Texas right to the brink. And he was doing that against guys that are, you know, guy that was playing on Sunday for Denver, Jay Barron. Like, he buried him in college. Like, he's got rare power.
Baldy, if we go around the league, because I don't want to waste anybody's time on the Jets, certainly not your time here. They're not worth talking about. Colts, how legit are Daniel Jones and the Indianapolis Colts?
They're totally legit. Like, Daniel Jones, like, I know he had a couple interceptions against the Rams. One wasn't his fault, but the guys did not make mistakes. The guy, the offense is dynamic. They just took the Chargers apart. They put up 44 on the Chargers. Like, and they went up and down the field on the road against that defense. It is well-designed. They've got the leading rusher in the league, a solid offensive line, and they've got what you would call weapons. Like, Tyler Warren is a beast. He looks, reminds me of Mark Bavaro, you know, be honest with you. Like, he runs that type of presence about him. And, you know, just to use a giant, you know, cult hero. But the offense is really good, really good. They could easily be 7-0 right now.
Are the Pats a year away, or are they kind of entering the real category?
Well, they went to Buffalo and they beat Buffalo.
Yep.
They took Tennessee apart. The quarterback doesn't make mistakes. They fixed the offense line. Two rookies on the left side are playing like veterans right now. And they got a championship-level coach. So they've improved the talent everywhere. Stephon Diggs is playing really good for him. Kayshawn Boutte is a legit receiver. They got talent. They're going to be a real – they're going to make a lot of noise in the AFC East. And it won't surprise me to see him win the division.
Last one, Baldy. The Eagles, Giants again. This one's going to be in Philadelphia. You did the game. You just said Minnesota Eagles starting to right the ship maybe a little bit. Where do you think that team is at going into this game with the Giants pounding them on Thursday Night Football a couple weeks ago? Is it going to be a different Eagles team? Can the Giants have a chance here? Where are the Eagles at?
I don't think the Eagles are a great defense. You know, they're minus. They might sign Brandon Graham today. You know, that retired. I mean, they just need somebody. Za'Darius Smith, they thought, could give him a little juice off the edge. You know, he went into retirement. They need help rushing a passer. They don't have a left corner. You know, there's a real weakness in defense. And then offensively, they went to a play-action pass game, kind of joined the 21st century, and they got a bunch of big plays off it on Sunday against the Vikings, which was the difference. The quarterback had his best game in a long time. The receivers are big time. So, I mean, they look different, but Saquon's still really struggling to run the football. Over 40% of all of his runs this year have gone for a yard or less.
Wow.
Is that him or the offensive line?
Wow, what a number.
Nah, I think it's more the offensive line. They had a backup center in there. You know, the left guard's been in and out of the lineup. He doesn't look the same with a bunch of injuries that he's playing through. I think it's more the offensive line than Saquon at this point.
Thanks, Baldy. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep. Good stuff.
Okay, guys, you got it.
All right, there you go. That was Odyssey NFL Insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. More of your calls when we come back.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.